Good evening, everyone. Picture this scene, if you will, like the opening shots of a spooky movie. It's a hot night in the Mojave, but the wind whipping against your face and in your hair makes it feel almost cool. The top is down on your finely tuned mechanical monster as you slice through the desert on a ribbon of asphalt, not a town or a house in sight. Out of the corner of your eye on the side of the road, dark figures zip out of your range of vision, uncertain specters like sentinels in the sand. A jagged, almost alien-looking yucca juts its spiky limbs in your direction, and something big that looks like a four-armed giant flashes by. You're pretty sure it's a stately saguaro, a humanoid-like cactus god that seems to be waving to you from the murky depths of the desert. They and other shadow creatures of the Mojave watch you as the convertible blasts down the road toward an unseen horizon. Above your head, a sea of stars, thick and radiant, because there's no other light to blot them out. Amorphous objects slide through the heavens from time to time, but you don't know what they are. You reach down, you click on the radio. You flip the dial around, past the squawking Viagra commercials and chatterbox DJs, bypassing gangster rappers and hip-hop hucksters, and then you find it, Coast to Coast AM, your companion for tonight's journey to yet another unknown destination. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is George Knapp. I'm your designated driver of the airwaves for tonight. We're driving down that road together, not quite sure of what we're searching for, but we're buckled up and ready for another adventure. Greetings from the boldest, bawdiest city in the world, the planetary capital of fun, sun, sin, sex, and secrets, my not-so-humble hometown, Las Vegas, Nevada. So glad to be with you once again, and I'm confident what we have in store will be worth your time tonight. You know, I remember reading a couple of years ago about Bill Clinton's first days in the White House. Turned out he had an interest in the same kind of topics that you and I are interested in. His friend and trusted legal advisor, a guy named Webb Hubble, wrote about this episode in a book years after both of them left government service. And Hubble said that the newly elected president had given him a special assignment back then in the early days of the Clinton administration. Clinton said that since he'd been elected to what was supposedly the most powerful position in the world, he wanted to know the answers to two questions. What's the real deal on UFOs, and who killed John F. Kennedy? And he gave that assignment to attorney Hubble, asked him to get to the bottom of both of them. And as far as we know, Hubble failed on both counts. I mean, he couldn't find the smoking gun, so to speak, regarding UFOs, Roswell, all that stuff. And he couldn't find the smoking gun, literally, I guess, in the mythology and speculation that have sprouted up around the JFK assassination. As regular listeners of this program know, those are two of the core subjects for Coast to Coast, two of the central conspiracy theories of our time, even if they really aren't conspiracies at all. I guess the jury officially is still out on both. Tonight, even though it is not the anniversary of the JFK murder, and there's no like definitive news peg to justify going into the assassination case all over again, we're heading down that road anyway, through the eyes of the only man to ever bring the murder to a courtroom, former District Attorney of New Orleans, Jim Garrison. And depending on your viewpoint, Garrison was either a crackpot, a grandstander, a liar, a nutball who twisted the law, made stuff up, extorted information out of witnesses, or he was an American hero who withstood death threats, a mudslinging campaign, a criminal prosecution, and all manner of personal turmoil to get to the bottom of one of the worst tragedies in American history, a transformative event in the life of our country and in the lives of most of us who are listening tonight. You know, I never met Jim Garrison. I don't know the man. I don't know if he was a lunatic who just wanted attention or a hero who sacrificed much for the greater good. But we're here tonight from a man who did know Garrison very well. His name is John Barber. And that name might not ring a bell right off the bat, but if you were watching television back in the 1970s, you certainly know who John Barber is. He is, in some respects, the father of what we now call reality TV, and he was the host and writer of the most popular program in America, bar none. He's had a fascinating life in his own in many respects, enough experiences with Hollywood royalty to like fill a book or two. But there's one chapter of that very full life that really hasn't been explored the way it should. And that is the friendship that he developed with Jim Garrison and the candid and very impressive, in my opinion, very impressive recordings he made from their long and detailed interviews about the JFK assassination. I know this crime of the century has been picked over many times on this show and other shows and in books and movies and TV, but I hope we'll be able to revisit this topic from a fresh perspective, sort of a vantage point that you may not have considered. So coming up in the second hour, my guest will be longtime TV producer and performer John Barber to talk about the legacy of Jim Garrison. And then in hour three, we're going to be joined in that conversation by my friend Mark Allen, who is one of the founders of the world's most popular conspiracy website, a good friend of this program, by the way, Above Top Secret, where, as you might imagine, the JFK story remains a hotly debated topic. Mark's going to tell us about what's on the mind of the public and the conspiracy crowd regarding JFK and other subjects of that ilk. Also talk a bit about the future of conspiracy media in general, where you and I and people like us may be heading someday for our information, other than coast to coast, that is. These are two very engaging and intelligent people, and I'm sure you're going to enjoy hearing from them and asking some questions of your own. A couple of stories from this week that didn't get much attention in the mainstream media, but I think are worth mentioning here. The first one is from the Times of London, and the headline reads, Billionaire Club in Bid to Curb Overpopulation. And according to the story, some of the richest people in the world, billionaires all, recently held this secret summit to figure out ways to use their wealth, their riches, to help the world. Bill Gates of Microsoft supposedly is the guy that called this meeting. David Rockefeller was there, no real surprise, I'd say. He always seems to figure in these kinds of scenarios. Warren Buffett, George Soros, media moguls Ted Turner and Oprah Winfrey, and Michael Bloomberg, the mayor of New York, pretty rich guy himself, was there. I guess he, according to this story, he was the only elected official politician type. According to the article, they gathered at the home of Sir Paul Nurse, a British Nobel Prize biochemist and president of the private Rockefeller University. It happened in Manhattan, May 5th. The informal afternoon session was so discreet that some of the billionaire's aides were told that the rich people were at security briefings. Stacey Palmer, the editor of the Chronicle of Philanthropy, said that this summit was unprecedented. We only learned about it afterwards by accident, she said. Normally, these people are happy to talk about their good causes, but this is different, maybe because they don't want to be seen as a global cabal. Fat chance on that one. Some details are emerging, I guess, about the meeting. The billionaires were each given 15 minutes to present their favorite cause, and then over dinner they discussed how they might settle it for an umbrella cause they could harness their interests. I guess they settled on population control, overpopulation being the priority. Now, exactly what they have in mind, how they plan to solve this is not clear, was not made obvious in this article that I found, so we don't know. And I guess it's easy to imagine a lot of dark conspiracies, maybe mass exterminations or something like that. But keep in mind, these few people have given away in excess of $50 or $60 billion of their own money to various charities over the years. So although we might initially suspect some dark motives, no evidence exactly that that's what they have in mind here. This is the other story that was carried all over the country but might have escaped your notice, and I'm sure the ultimate implications have not been considered by most of the news consumers who read it. It was called, the headline was, Green Glowing Monkeys Have Green Glowing Babies. Did you see that one in your local paper? It was carried here in Las Vegas. Japanese researchers have genetically engineered monkeys whose hair, roots, skin, and blood glow green under a special light, and then they've passed on these traits to their offspring. First time it's been achieved in a primate. Apparently, they took genes from a jellyfish, put them into marmosets, and then these marmosets had babies that carried the same green stuff. They called it a milestone, said they're interested in using it to tackle Parkinson's disease and ALS. They're even experimenting with mice now to see if it works for them. I don't have to spell out the implications for you. I mean, genetic manipulation for good will, good reasons, can likely be quickly followed by genetic manipulation for bad or selfish reasons. I mean, I can see something as simple as genetic tinkering to create a super athlete who can hit a fastball, or then maybe later a super soldier or a spy. You can imagine where it goes from there. We're going to take a short break now. As I said, coming up in a little bit, we're going to be talking with John Barber. That's coming up at the top of this hour. Got a lot of science and technology news to discuss as well. We'll do that right after this short break. Then we'll open up the phone lines and find out what's on your minds as we continue to snake our way down that long, winding desert road to the unknown. I'm George Knapp, and this is Coast to Coast. Welcome back. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm George Knapp. Coming up in a couple of minutes, we open the phone lines up, find out what you want to chat about tonight as we rev up the engine and plow through the darkness together. Then at the top of the hour, a history-making broadcaster named John Barber joins us to talk about one of history's darkest events, the JFK assassination, as seen through the eyes of John Barber's friend, D.A. Jim Garrison of New Orleans, the man who tried to put JFK plotters in prison but failed, and whose reputation has taken a real beating over the years. After that, then, Mark Allen from AboveTopSecret.com joins us to talk about conspiracies in general, why the JFK story still resonates after so many years, and where it's all heading. I also want to mention some possible guests I'm trying to get lined up for future shows. You've all heard of T. Boone Pickens, the oil billionaire who wants to transform America's energy economy, lessen dependence on foreign oil, got an ambitious plan in the works. I have a sort of a line into Mr. Pickens and think we're going to get him, possibly in June. And the person who's helping me set that one up is in pretty good standing with T. Boone Pickens. She's his wife, Madeline Pickens, an accomplished woman in her own right. She's been, as you know, campaigning to save the wild horse herds, and we've talked about that here from time to time on Coast to Coast, up against a formidable bureaucracy, but still plugging away, and I think we might have some progress to report on that fairly soon. Hope to get Mr. and Mrs. Pickens on the same program together very soon. Keep you updated on that one. We tried really hard a couple of times in recent months to get former Minnesota Governor Jesse Ventura on the program. He's got a new book out. He's appeared on a couple of talk shows, but we're told that the program Coast airs too darn late for him, too late at night. He doesn't stay up that late, so he's not going to do it, which is too bad because he's a really interesting and outspoken character. Last Sunday, you'll recall, we revisited the story of the UFO crash near Needles, California, 1 year after it happened. And the witnesses all say that the object that crashed on the Colorado riverbank was this large cylindrical look to metallic thing, maybe 30 to 50 feet long, glowed this turquoise hue as it came flashing across the sky, and then it was carried away by helicopters, military helicopters, presumably. The consensus seemed to be that this object was something that was being tested by our military, and it kind of got away from them and crashed. But what was it? I still don't know. If anybody else knows, I haven't heard from them. But now we have a photo of something that sure looks like what the Needles witnesses described. It was photographed in the sky over New York and was sent to me as part of the Filer's Files. That's an online service that sends news clippings and private photos of UFO-related events to subscribers. Anyway, I've asked Lex, our webmaster, to post it on the Coast site so that you can take a look. And I'll tell you, if you know what that thing is, please tell me, because I don't. So take a peek at it whenever Lex gets that thing up there. You know, and also on the website, while we're getting ourselves worked up and a bit paranoid, justify or not, take a look at a couple of the stories that are posted there by Lex. One is an article about how your cell phone can be used to spy on you, to listen to your conversations, trace your whereabouts, even listening to conversations when you're not on the phone. I mean, just can be used sort of as to bug a room. Spooky stuff. And I don't mean just if it's used by the government. I mean, imagine such technology in the hands of the angry spouse. And there's another article there written by arch debunker and skeptic Michael Shermer. You recognize the name. It's about why people think there are invisible agents in control of the world. Why we silly, silly common people believe there are such things as ghosts or aliens, demons, angels, and such. And Mr. Shermer has it all figured out, and he'll explain to us why we're all full of it and why we're dead wrong. Now, I haven't read this full article, but I'm sure it's something about how we're all searching for meaning in our lives. And if we can't have God, then we're going to go ahead and invent one. And if we can't invent God, then we substitute aliens or ghosts. I'll tell you, these debunkers need to come up with some new material. I know just on the UFO topic, there are a lot of folks who have seen these things close up who didn't want to see them, whose lives have suffered as a result and wish it had never happened. And it's part of why so many people keep their mouths shut about unusual experiences, because they fear of being ridiculed by people like Michael Shermer. He might want to familiarize himself as well with some of the secret studies prepared by our government and military about UFOs. Examples of studies that were conducted in secret were never meant to be seen by anyone outside of the government. These things were done before there was a Freedom of Information Act, before anyone could imagine a time when the public could get to read these previously classified documents. So I suggest Mr. Shermer maybe check out some of that material. Secret agents and entities don't really control our world or influence it. The tone of that title, it sounds like the writer believes that we're all a little bit wacky. I'm not sure I agree with that premise, but check out the article when you get a chance. I got a couple of science and technology stories to talk about as well from the last couple of weeks. I don't know if you saw this one. It's kind of hits close to home. The title, and it was carried on MSNBC.com, Giant Blob Found Deep Beneath Nevada, which sounds like a great premise for a monster movie or something. It was carried by MSNBC and also by something called Live Science. And the story goes, hidden beneath the U.S. Great Basin, that covers Nevada and Utah and other parts of other states, scientists have spied this giant blob of rocky material dripping like honey. The Great Basin consists of small mountain ranges separated by valleys, includes most of Nevada, the western half of Utah, and portions of other nearby states. While studying this area, John West of Arizona State University and his colleagues found evidence of this large cylindrical blob of cold material far below the surface of central Nevada. Comparison of the results with CAT scans of the inside of the Earth taken by ASU scientists found what they call a lithospheric drip. And this is what scientists think is happening with the lithospheric drip. They say it works like this. The Earth's mantle, which lies below the thin outer crust we live on, consists of rock which deforms plastically on very long timescales due to the heat and pressure at depth. And in any material which can flow, including this mantle, a heavy object will tend to sink through this lighter material. So a region of heavier material trapped in the lithosphere gets warmed up and begins to sink into the lighter, less dense mantle beneath, pulling this long tail of material after it. Honey dripping off of a spoon is a visual aid to what we think this drip looks like, this Dr. West told MSNBC. Dripping honey tends to lead with a large blob and then a long tail. He said this blob is between 30 and 60 miles in diameter, and it extends from a depth of 47 miles to 310 miles beneath the Earth's surface. They think it's been there for 15 to 20 million years, and I'm imagining the title of the movie could be, you know, The Drip That Swallowed the Planet, something like that. Also in science news, this story, the headline is, Close-Up Look at Black Hole Reveals Feeding Frenzy. Did you see this one? It was carried on space.com, and it says astronomers are getting a close-up look at a cosmic eating machine, a spinning black hole that devours the mass equivalent of 2 Earths per hour, verging on the limit of its feeding ability. And I thought I had an appetite, a healthy appetite. Good gosh. Supermassive black holes, MSNBC says, can weigh as much as a billion suns or more and are thought to reside at the centers of most, if not all, large galaxies. Their gravity is so powerful that it traps even light, making black holes basically invisible. Their presence is inferred by watching the motions of stars and gas around them. So it says, as matter swirls in toward this black hole, gravity makes it travel at significant fractions of light speed. That generates X-rays and other radiation that can give astronomers information about the spin of this black hole and its size. So this thing is gigantic. It weighs about the equivalent of 3 million to 5 million solar masses. I guess it's modest by black hole standards, but certainly massive compared to Earth, which it eats 2 of per hour. If you haven't seen that story, check it out. And then the one other story I thought was pretty interesting in space news, also from MSNBC. It's a headline, Space Tomato Packs Nutritional Super Punch. This one didn't get much coverage, but I thought it was pretty interesting. I guess I'm biased against that since I eat more tomatoes than anything, I think. What started as a science experiment to grow plants in space has blossomed into a drought-resistant, nutritionally rich tomato, patent pending. These researchers at North Carolina State, I guess they had intended to develop this tomato, these seedlings, and then send them up to the International Space Station. They did. They got them up there, and then they grew really well for a short period and then died. So they've been trying to figure out what was wrong with it, what caused them to die. Adverse growing conditions, such as a lack of air circulation, is what they figured out. So they went back and tinkered with it genetically. And while the space experiment was a bust, These transgenic seeds they developed are now blossoming on Earth. They're producing these plants that can survive severe drought. They can go like 3 weeks with no water. They're very hardy. The one thing is, what about the taste, though? They haven't got around to the ultimate test, taste. And I don't know about you, but I eat a lot of tomatoes, and it's been a long time since they've had a good-tasting tomato. They did genetic engineering to make the skin tough so they can be picked up by machines. But these things taste like, I don't know, cardboard. Anyway, we're going to come back in a couple of minutes. We're going to hear from what's on your mind. And then at the top of the hour, we'll be talking to John Barber about the JFK assassination and Jim Garrison. Stay with us. I'm George Knapp. This is Coast to Coast AM. Thanks for being with us, everyone. We've got a good show for you tonight. We're going to be joined at the top of this hour, as I mentioned, by John Barber, who is a well-known TV producer and TV performer that I think you'll remember him as soon as you start hearing his voice. And he had an interview, as I mentioned, with Jim Garrison, got to know Jim Garrison, the DA from New Orleans, very well, and became well-versed in the lore of the JFK assassination. And if you think it is a conspiracy, and a lot of us do, that a lot of people may have conspired to bump off the president, there's a question that I think has not been adequately addressed, and it's this one. Who told Jack Ruby to kill Lee Harvey Oswald? If you believe it was a conspiracy that Jack Ruby was part of it and he killed Oswald under orders, who was it that issued the order? That is one of the topics and one of the questions that John Barber is prepared to address tonight. So I hope you'll stay with us for that. I want to take this break. When we come back, we're going right to the phones. A lot of you folks are holding on there, and I want to see what's on your minds tonight. I'm George Knapp, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. I'm George Knapp. This is Coast to Coast. We're going to the phones. Wildcard line, Frank in Southern California. How you doing, Frank?
Good, George. How are you?
Okay. What's on your mind?
You know, I heard you talking about that article, the Billionaire Boys and Girls Club wanting to curb the population.
Right.
And, you know, they're doing a good job of it out here in Southern California, I think. They're spraying us like insects.
Chemtrails you're talking about.
Oh, it's just unbelievable, George. I mean, we haven't had any sun for about 5 days straight. I mean, literally for 4 or 5 days straight until today. We had sun for about 2 hours. You know, they're blowing these exhaust pipe clouds off the coast. I'm in a coastal area in L.A. County, and they're getting really creative. They're creating what I think it's fake fog. I mean, usually when you have fog and marine layers, you can smell the ocean air, but you don't smell any of that. And right now I'm outside. I'm looking up in the sky, and then we got another cover, and it's just kind of got a pink tint. And I was reading this article about the dust melting the snow in the Colorado Rockies, and it had a pinkish tint. And I've seen a lot of clouds coming in that got like a pink tint. And when the sun cleared, when it finally cleared, the kooks were out there spraying all over the place again. I mean, they're nonstop out here. I'm not kidding. And people are getting sick, and people are getting agitated. And I know a lot of people are pissed off like me. There's really not much I can do. So I'm like an insect, and there's a giant can of Raid up there. And it's unbelievable. Some of the clouds that they blow in, they look like they came out of the back of an exhaust pipe. The entire sky is covered again right now. And I don't know when we're going to have sun again. It's insane down here.
I have to admit to you, I am not I'm not well versed in all the information about chemtrails. I did dig into it, I don't know, 8 or 9 years ago, because we had, you know, you'd look up above the sky of the Las Vegas Valley and see this checkerboard pattern. And so we started asking around. You go to meteorologists and military people, and I have to tell you, I couldn't crack it. I couldn't crack it then anyway. Maybe there's new information now. I am really intrigued by the topic, and I get emails about it every day, but I don't know what to tell people. I mean, for example, you said they are doing it. Who's they? I mean, who would spray this to make people sick when it could affect their neighbors, their families, their, you know, people like that? I mean, the government, is that what you're saying is behind it, you think?
Well, according to what I've read, it's the military under the direction of the NSA, and this is what I've read. And matter of fact, they've forced the airlines to cooperate because they don't have enough aircraft. They're doing this nationwide. They're doing it globally. They're stopping the rain. I've watched it. I've really seen what they've done over the last 3 years. About 4 years ago, I read that they did a test off the coast of Southern California. There's a giant storm front coming into Los Angeles. They sprayed massively in front of it, created their own artificial front. It completely dissipated the storm. After I read that, I started watching, observing, and every time we've had a forecast for rain, they've intensified the spraying, and now we're in a drought. They've either stopped it or completely, they've diminished it or completely stopped it altogether. They're creating winds with it, I believe, and they're making a lot of people sick because they're putting what I've read, an assortment of pathogens and heavy metals like aluminum and barium. They claim that they're trying to combat global warming or to protect us from a depleting ozone layer. I do not buy it. Barium breaks down the immune system. The pathogens that I've read that are in there, bacterium, mold spores, fungi, superviruses, and people say, well, why are they doing this? Well, there's a gentleman by the name of Edward Teller who was the brainchild behind this, and he's an elitist, and this is just another one of the elites.
Edward Teller of the H-bomb, you mean?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah, I think it was him. This is just another one of their bag of tricks for culling the population. And just like you said, I had to call in because you were talking about these billionaires getting together, talking about depopulating. And really, this to me is there's no doubt about it. That's why people are getting sick. They have costs. I honestly believe that the 2/3 of the bee population have been killed off because Dr. Diane Cox Foster of Penn State University said that they died from an assortment of fungi and their immune systems broke
well,
down.
Well, okay. All right. Okay, I got your point. Here's what I would like to see. And if somebody's got the evidence out there, this is what I tell people who write to me or call about it. If you've got the evidence, let's see it. Because a program like this, that's supposedly this big all over the world, where's the whistleblower come forward? Where is the chemical analysis of people in hospitals dying, the causal link between what we're seeing in the sky and what is happening on the ground? Because I haven't seen any reports about mass deaths. The other part that bothers me is if our government is involved in it, why wouldn't we be spraying the rest of the world and leaving us alone? I can't imagine they'd want Americans to die off in the same sort of numbers or percentages that they'd like to see it happen to the rest of the world, especially if, for example, it's this massive program going on all over the country. You got to believe that some of these people who are involved in it know that they'd be spraying their own hometowns, their own families, things of that sort. So while I remain intrigued about the whole thing, Frank, and I see the same evidence that you do in the sky, and I wonder about it, what the heck is that, and why isn't it like the contrails of old? I have yet to see the evidence. I have yet to see the guys who've been involved in the program, yet to see the chemical analysis, and I certainly haven't seen any evidence that there are these massive die-offs happening or huge increases in the number of sick people. No analysis of chemicals in their system. So if anybody's got that information, let's see it. Frank, thanks for the call. We're going to go to wild card line, Robert in Irvine. Hi, Robert.
Hello. This is Robert of Irvine, California, and I would like to ask what you think is the future of banana plants as far as there being a fungus that could cause their destruction due to them being clones.
I think you've stumped me on that one. What do you know? I don't know anything about banana plants, so what do you know?
I know that banana plants have reduced their yield by 30% in many third world countries due to the fact that there have been diseases that have reduced its lifespan from 30 years to 3 years. So the production of banana plants has reduced significantly, causing a worldwide increase in their prices.
Huh. Well, see, that's a conspiracy I could get behind because we've done that kind of stuff. It's well documented that we've done that sort of stuff, defoliating places or sabotaging cash crops to hurt the economies of other countries, that sort of thing, an enemy country. Is that what you're saying, is that we're behind it, our government or our industry? Are you still there, Robert?
Yes.
Who's doing this? Who is it that's behind this?
Behind what?
I thought we were talking about banana plants.
Yeah, it's a disease genetically engineered. Like somebody genetically engineered the bananas that cause this disease to come.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. I'm intrigued by that. If you come up with any more solid information, call us back and let us know about it. We're going east of the Rockies. Sam in Rochester. Hi, Sam.
Good morning. How are you, sir?
Okay.
Yeah, I just had a question. Actually, I want to make a comment about you know, we got like this big deficit in New York and everything. I think if they were to legalize mixed martial arts as a sport here, that they would make millions of dollars. Millions.
Mixed martial arts is not legal in New York?
No, it's not. It's in the. They're trying to legalize it right now, but they're dragging their feet on it. And I'll be honest with you, I think they would make a ton of money with it. It's the biggest sport in the world right now.
Well, I mean, Las Vegas is one of the headquarters of it.
Vegas is
the
it.
Guys. Yeah, the guys who own the UFC, who founded UFC, they own a couple of casinos in here, station casinos in town, and they're making more money on UFC than they are in their casinos these days. And it's overshadowed boxing. It's taken over that. It's a wildly popular, draws thousands and thousands of fans. It's huge. So you could be right on that.
Wrestling too. I mean, it just you know, it is what it is. I mean, you got crossover guys like Brock Lesnar and guys like that are coming to the sport. So.
Yeah, I'm just surprised, Sam, to learn that it's not legal there. I just basically thought it was legal everywhere, same as any kind of contact sport would be. But thanks for the call. I hope someone in New York, some lawmakers there are listening, because I'm sure your state, like my state, could use the extra revenue. First-time caller, Stephen in Louisiana. Hi, Stephen.
Yeah, it's Stefan.
Stefan, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's quite all right. Yeah, I wanted to thank you. I really enjoy Coast to Coast. You're like a really good friend I listen to in the evenings.
Well, thanks very much.
Yeah, that goes out to everyone, George Norrie and yourself and all the rest of the team. And, you know, I'm right in the suburb of New Orleans, south of the Lake Pontchartrain. I don't know if you know the area too well.
Sure. Not real well, but I love it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the other night I saw something finishing, and I've actually seen a lot of objects man-made and, you know, unidentified quite frequently, and I've sort of given up taking logs because I see them so often. I don't know. I'm not sure why that is, but...
What about photos and video? Photos?
Pardon?
Photos, video, you got any of that?
No. They happen very quickly. You know, it happens very quickly. I don't run around with... And I have a camera, you know, ready to snap it. But the other night, I saw two planes approaching the Louis Armstrong Airport from north of the lake. I was on a bicycle, and it was nighttime. And parallel to the approach of the aircraft was a single light running parallel to them. And what was unique about the light is that it took a right turn, a pivot immediately. So it was obviously some kind of device in the sky. And the unique thing about it was that it took an extreme right turn. It didn't, there was only one light. It wasn't blinking or anything like that. It just parallel to the planes, and then took right and headed out east. And, these things happen quite a lot.
So it's lights? Can you make up any... I'm sorry, can you make out any kind of shape or just lights, blobs
of
light?
No, it's just a single point. It was just a single point, non-flashing. Single point of light, and took a right-hand turn.
I'll tell you, Stefan.
That's, to me, what made it so unusual, because, objects don't typically take strong right turns in the middle of the sky.
Yeah, certainly not anything manned. If you had a person in there and you take a right turn, I mean, they're going to be smashed, aren't they? And that's what people have often said about UFOs. The frustrating thing for me, Stefan, is our technology, human technology, particularly American technology, has advanced so much that you really can't tell the difference between some of the really exotic stuff that we build and some of the more unexplained kinds of things that people used to report as UFOs. I mean, we're so far ahead of anything that they've really admitted that it's hard to tell what's ours up there and what might be from somewhere else. I don't know if that's on purpose or not, but it sounds like the kinds of things that you're seeing. We've got, that we're the basis of the Predator program is right here in the Las Vegas Valley. They fly these Predators from here. They man the controls and fly missions in Afghanistan and Iraq, and it's miraculous what some of these things can do. I can only imagine what kinds of more advanced things that they've got out at places like Area 51 that they haven't taken the wraps off of yet and haven't told us to the public or maybe even Congress about. So I appreciate the call, Stefan, and I know you can't have a camera around your neck all the time, but maybe have one sitting on the table ready to go next time. Thanks for calling. We're going to go to Blair in Sedona, Arizona on the wild card line. Hi, Blair.
Hi, George. Hey, I saw JFK live in 1962 at Cal Berkeley's football stadium when his stomp for the Atomic Test Ban Treaty that was finally signed in 1963. He was in the middle. He was talking to college football stadiums about the commonality of human experience. It was really pretty cool.
Well, I'm jealous. That would have been a cool thing to see. You know, that test ban treaty was not very popular here in my state because this was the home of the nuclear testing program. A lot of big scientific, high-paying jobs that went away as a result of the ban, but probably, though, the world was a better place for it. Atmospheric testing of nuclear weapons, it sounds crazy from this vantage point, doesn't it?
Yeah, we're living, I guess, in the midst of premature technology advance amongst what I guess I could call societal deprivation of a spirit source. You know?
That's an interesting way to put it. What do you mean?
Well, basically, if we're evolutionary creations of God learning to become masters of existence, if you take that premise, in other words, intelligent design utilizes evolution. I'm a metaphysical creature from the Jesus point of view. We were seated as potential eternal beings, but we've been given that gift of free will. So we make our decisions whether we're going to survive or not, George.
Blair, you express yourself very well. I appreciate the call. That's a good way to put it. And I, like I said, I'm jealous that you got to see JFK in person. Mike is in Birmingham, Alabama. Hi, Mike.
Hey, George. Let me tell you, first off, I really love your style on air. It's the closest to Art Bell of all the guests they have. You do a great job. Any topic is very interesting when you're on. I love listening to you.
Thanks very much.
The reason I'm calling in, and I just thought of this while I was waiting on hold, I've read your book, Skinwalker Ranch. Okay.
Right.
Now, hang on to that thought. You remember near the end where you were where it was talking about how the people that lived there, or when you guys had the all of the stuff set up, before the hole would open in the sky, there would be like a little shimmer, almost like it was a interdimensional hole that the Bigfoot or whatever would come out of, correct?
Yes.
Okay, now, a couple nights ago, I'm in my backyard area, and, you know, just watching the sky, and I'm noticing a cloud, like, moving against the wind, and I'm thinking, you know what, that's kind of odd. When it got at an angle to where the moon was, kind of when it was a 45-degree angle from where I was standing, there was like a little shimmer, and it brought to mind what I'd read in there. And the cloud, where I was looking kind of shimmered, and the next thing I saw one of those black triangles. It was almost like the angle that I was looking at it, whatever its little cloaker device or whatever, the angle that I was looking at it, I was able to see through that. I was wondering if you'd heard any stuff about like those kind of cloaking things with the black triangles or anything like that. And additionally, I wanted to say God bless Scott Roeder. He did a great thing today.
Okay, Mike, thanks for the call and the question. Well, I've heard reports of that shimmer kind of stuff associated with black triangles at the ranch, at the Skinwalker Ranch, the place in Utah that we wrote about, but I haven't heard it as you describe it regarding any other place. Of course, the black triangle sightings have been seen all over the place. The theory that Colm Kelleher and I developed about that ranch was that some sort of a portal, a dimensional portal, you know, and we're just guessing. We're not saying it's definitive or anything like that, that there's some way that they, whoever they are, can come here, but we can't duplicate it by going there, wherever there is. Witnesses have described seeing these holes in the sky, that you could see another sky on the other side, and that objects would zip in and out. And it was very exciting but disturbing information. And the fact is that activity at that ranch in Utah has pretty much evaporated. It's gone underground or gone somewhere else. But Mike's calling from Birmingham, and hey, maybe it's moved over there. Let me try to get one more call in before we have to go to our break for the top of the hour. Ernie in Massachusetts. Hi, Ernie.
Yes, how you doing? Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I would like to know what the United States would look like after a billion people.
After a billion people living here, you mean?
Yes.
Well, I would say we'd be pretty darn crowded, and I don't know how our resources could survive it. I don't know what it's like in your area right now, but here in the Southwest, we're having trouble, even though growth has slowed down because of the economic doldrums we're in right now. Having a lot of trouble coming up with enough water to support the population. A billion people, that's what, three times our population now?
Yep, uh-huh.
Wow. I wouldn't want to live in that country. I don't think I'd want to live in that world, that crowded. What makes you ask the question?
Because I've been thinking about the population for some time now, and I don't know how to let the people know that there's a solution, hopefully later on down the road, that would help the population.
Well, you know, the vast amount of increased population is in third world or developing countries. Countries like the U.S. have a pretty stable population. We're growing, but at a pretty low rate. Same is true in Western Europe, some of the more advanced countries. But it's the other countries that have exploding populations, and it's You may not like the billionaire club that I mentioned earlier in the show and their approach to it, but it's got to be something we all pay attention to because it's going to affect us in the future. Thanks for that call, Ernie. We're going to take a break, and then we're coming back with John Barber to talk about Jim Garrison and the JFK assassination. Stay with us on Coast to Coast AM.